prayed before moving in. And then, trying to find it where it is here. Chapter 24, verse 21, it says, "And the man wondering at her, at Rebecca, remained silent, so as to know whether the Lord had made his journey prosperous or not." And and I have a note here in my margin that I wait on the Lord from Psalm 27:14.
Hmm.
Sometimes it's good to, you know, be silent and just listen to the Lord and wait for him.
Right, right. Because that would have definitely tampered with the scene if you had said, "Now, do you want to also water my camels too?" Right? So that was part of the test to know whether the Lord had made his way prosperous. And so he knew right away. And I like how in chapter 24, in verse 45, as he's kind of retelling the story, that he says, "But before I had finished speaking in my heart, there was Rebecca."
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of an amazing thought. A lot of times we don't recognize providence until it's further down the line and we look back, right? He was able to see it unfolding right before his eyes. That's an amazing amazing thought, for sure. Good. Anybody else?
I find it interesting, too, that she was ready to go. It's like, I mean, life back then was so different from what we have now.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's not how she started off her day, thinking that she would be leaving her family. Right. You know, but all of a sudden, you know, her life has changed forever. I think helping to know that it was part of God's plan was very key. Nancy?
I like the first three verses. 20 of them made it so overall.
Mm. Oh, yes, yes. Going back to the Abraham's threefold promise. That's right. And what were the three promises?
Land, nation, and the seed through
people. That's right.
People to come.
Yep. And so we're now seeing that unfold in the 17 time periods.
All the way to Jesus.
Mm-hmm. That's right. God fulfilling his word. And that's why the focus then takes place there. Because if God really wanted to, I mean, he could go into great detail about the planet, you know, and every mystery that we have about, you know, the elements of nature and, you know, creation, those kinds of things. But he doesn't, because his main focus wasn't to talk about all those things, but to talk about how to redeem man from his sins. Yes, good. Anybody else? Yes, Judy?
The fact that he chose a woman that loved God, mm-hmm. not like Samson.
Yes, that's a good point. That's right. And we'll talk about him when we get to the judges, won't we? All right. Anybody else? Did somebody see anything? Okay. All right. So picking up where we left off there, we had started to pick up with Isaac and how Rebecca is found now as wife in chapter 24. Chapter 25 is where I call him the first patriarch, but he's not, obviously. There's been other patriarchs. But we're talking about in regards to fulfilling God's plan, right? And the patriarch that God focuses upon, Abraham, he's now the first one to go on record as passing away. So look here in Genesis 25, and if I can get a reader of verses 7 through 11, please.
Okay. This is the sum of the years of Abraham's life which he lived, 175 years. Then Abraham breathed his last and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. And his sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, which is before Mamre, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, the field which Abraham purchased from the sons of Heth. There Abraham was buried, and Sarah his wife. And it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt at Beer Lahai Roy.
Okay, thank you. So there's the record of his death and his burial. How old was he?
175 years old.
Okay. Now, in contrast to the generation of Adam and Seth and Methuselah, is this close in terms of age? Yeah, he was a young whippersnapper compared to those individuals. And so we see the age has certainly dropped off. Even after the flood, Seth still lived, you know, so many years, I forget, maybe 500-600 years. But then it starts to go down to the 200s, and now we're in the 100s. And what does Moses describe his age as? A good old age. So by the time Moses is on the scene, this is like the top, you know, that one could kind of reach as an age, right? It was a good old age, he describes it. And of course, no one reaches that today, right? So there's definitely a big difference. I don't know what they say the average age is for men and for women now, but 70, upper 70s, I'm not sure. 80? I'm not sure. But it's about 100 years difference now, right? And by the time you get to David's age, right, that's when he starts in the Psalms talking about, you know, 62, you know, and then if reason of use, 10 more years. And so the ages are definitely changing in their trajectory. We see verse 9, Isaac and Ishmael are there together. So there's the two brothers reunited. So I think you see in the beginning, like you do with a lot of the family, there's not necessarily hard feelings there. It's just a part, they're realizing part of God's plan is different for each one of them. And even Ishmael comes to pay his respects to his dad that had passed away along with Isaac there. And then we see verse 10, Abraham was buried and Sarah, his wife, there. So they're buried together. And so, you know, individuals, we know, we understand that the spirit's not with the body, right? And yet we still see it, even to this day, thousands of years later, endearing to have our remains placed next to the one we cherished life with. Yes, Tim.
Did the women live with all of the men?
Sometimes they did. Right, a lot of their ages aren't recorded. Yeah, but I would assume that they were up there, aging slowly and different. I mean, because we know that Sarah was 90 years old when Abraham was worried that some foreigners would think she was beautiful and, you know, want her as wife. And so that's when he's like, oh, she's my sister, you know. But it was 90. So evidently, you know, they're aging. Like I said, it was much, much slower process. Yeah.
23:1 says that she was 127 years old when she died.
Okay, so she was quite a bit younger, 123. We didn't mention this, but in chapter 25, verse 1, before Abraham died, we see that he did remarry again. Keturah was his second wife, and with her, he had more children with her as well. Okay, any other thoughts about Abraham dying? Yes?
I just have one thing that he talked about the field where Sarah was buried, and I just think back in chapter 23 where he bought the field. And I like the idea there are certain other instances in the Bible where people didn't accept handouts. They paid for what they got.
Oh, that's right, because they did offer them for free, yes. And so he wanted it to be a legal transaction. Let me buy it from you. Good, good. All right. So what we'll transition next to is the narrative is going to turn to Jacob being born, right? Because now we're talking about Isaac. We're talking about Rebekah. They're now on the scene as the next patriarchal head for the family. The blessings, remember, God said, through Isaac I've called. You know, and so now we're going to look here at their children. Now, let's drop down to verse 20. And if I can get a reader, verses 20 through 23, please. Go ahead, Nancy.
20 through 23.
Yes, sir.
Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as his wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Hamor, Aram, the sister of Laban the Syrian. Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife, because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But the children struggled together within her, and she said, "It all is well. Why am I like this?" So she went to inquire about the Lord. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb. Two people will be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger."
Okay, thank you. All right, so we see the age which Isaac was when they're married. But we see verse 21 that it was a while before she was able to get pregnant. Okay, we haven't read how long. Does anyone know? Okay, it'll tell us in just a little bit. 20 years, that they're married before they're able to have children. So they plead, and the Lord allows the womb to be opened. And then she starts to have some pregnancy issues that take place. Yes?
It's always fascinating how many times God uses the number 40.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lots of times. For sure. Yeah, good point. So she wants to know what's going on, and the Lord replies that she has twins. And so that's why, things are feeling the way that they do. But also it was symbolic of the struggle that would come in the days to come, the centuries in the future, of the struggle between two nations, right? Jacob would be the head of one, and Esau would be the head of the other. And then very importantly, he says at the end, "And the older shall serve the younger." So here's another instance where his plan is going to unfold, but maybe not the way that man would see it should unfold, right? The older always received the top blessing. The older always received the top inheritance. And it was through them that supposedly all the family line and blessings would come. But here he's saying it's going to be the opposite. The older shall serve the younger. Used to be my brother's favorite verse. He'd love to quote to me. all right. So picking up in verse 24, it says, "So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over. And so they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 6 years old when she bore them. So the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob." And so we might say, Jacob and Esau couldn't be more different from each other, right? In terms of looks, in terms of likes and dislikes, and the things that they found to spend their time with. And so there's certainly a difference there, and God is trying to point that out to us. Now, verse 29 is where we start to see some of this sibling rivalry start. It says, "Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, 'Please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary.' Therefore his name was called Edom. But Jacob said, 'Sell me your birthright as of this day.' And Esau said, 'Look, I'm about to die, so what is this birthright to me?' And Jacob said, 'Swear to me as of this day.' And so he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. And then he ate and drank, arose and went his way. And thus Esau despised his birthright." Wow, there's a lot to unpack there, isn't there? What's some of your initial thoughts about this?
He's dramatic. I'm going to die. Yeah. So it doesn't matter. I have my birth.
Yeah. Good point. I mean, people have fasted many days, you know, and still been able to live. And there's no indication that he had necessarily been fasting at all. He'd just been out in the field and he was really hungry. And we've all had those, you know, hunger pains, so to speak, but they subside. And so, right, dramatic and maybe making rash decisions that aren't very wise. Anybody else?
If there was brotherly love there, he would have offered him food. Not kind of blackmail him into selling his birthright.
All right. So now he's seizing an opportunity, right? And again, it kind of plays in with this rivalry between the two nations. Good. Anybody else?
Yeah. I know I have here where at the end of the chapter it says Esau despised his birthright. And I think about people who are Christians that leave the Lord. Mm-hmm. It's as if they're despising what the Lord has provided for them in salvation.
Good point. Yes. Nancy?
Something I think of. There's a lot of issues here that the parents have got to deal with between Jacob and Esau. Same as with Cain. And I would think a father would learn so much more in dealing with people when they've got more than one child. Mm-hmm. He's got one child, one of his jealousy, and all of these other things going on. So I think of the wisdom when a father has more than one child that would be beneficial in the church.
There's benefits that you learn from it, and also additional hardships that you gain from it too. But you definitely see part of the sibling rivalry was created because of their deficiencies as parents, because it makes it very clear there was favoritism, right? So Isaac loved Esau, and Rebekah loved Jacob. And so that is highlighted in some of the sibling rivalry as well. Yeah.
Which is beneficial for people to see that. You know, I just think parents learn from their mistakes too.
Yeah. Anybody else? Good. Okay, so there's all that is taking place here. We see him sell his birthright for just a temporary benefit, and the Bible describes it just to, you know, here's the bread and here's the stew of lentils, and he ate and he drank, and as soon as he stops eating and drinking, it's over. And so the Hebrew writer later on talks about Esau really was the main fool here, because he should not have traded something so permanent for something so temporary.
You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And that was something that would be brought out later, that he marries foreign women, and that was a plague to the parents. But here we see the birthright being sold. Then the next is we're going to see the blessing be taken from him in chapter 26. Some may have wondered, what's the difference between the birthright and the blessing? Well, the birthright is usually considered like the material, legal blessings that come from being like the firstborn. And that's being transferred now over to Jacob. And the blessing was more like a prophetic pronouncement that was given usually by the head of the house, the patriarch, near his time of death. And it was considered irrevocable. And so Isaac definitely thought he would be blessing his older son, whom he loved, right? There's deception that's going to go on and take place. Does anyone remember how that happens?
Well, Rebekah overhears Isaac telling Esau what to do. And so while Esau's out in the field hunting game, she dresses Jacob in Esau's clothes and puts hair on him so that, you know, because he's not hairy, because Isaac was practically blind. And so she gets him to help her deceive his father.
Mm-hmm.
And he offers him the blessing.
That's right.
She cooked the meat that he loved.
That's right, yes. And so that's how they're able to confuse him, because he couldn't see. And so he used other senses, and they knew he would. And so you see in chapter, 27. I skipped over chapter 26, just so you know. But I was going to mention that Isaac deceives Abimelech, similar to Abraham, in a very similar way, right? So they see Rebecca, is she your wife? Oh, no, she's my sister, right? And so, again, what we talked about is that, like father, like son, often the deficiencies of the parents are reborn in the children. That's certainly borne out here with Abraham. Someone as great as Abraham, yet Isaac does a similar thing. But here in chapter 27, Jacob deceives Isaac, and he is the one that is blessed. And so in chapter 27, verse 27, it says, "And he came near and kissed him and smelled the smell of his clothing, and he blessed him and said, 'Surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let peoples serve you, and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you.'" And so here he blesses the wrong son. He thought it was Esau. And when news comes in, because Esau now returns from his journey and has made savory food, verse 31, it says Esau had made savory food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, "Let my father rise and eat of his son's game, that your soul may bless me." And his father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" And so he said, "I am your son, your firstborn, Esau." Then Isaac trembled exceedingly. You ever thought about that? Why is he shaken so much by this, right? Couldn't he just say, "Oh, I made a mistake"? Right? Now I'm going to go ahead and bless you with what I had said of Jacob. It's because Isaac knew that these were prophetic pronouncements. They were irrevocable. You can't do that. And so he knew his irrevocable blessing had been given to the other son. And that's why he trembled. A mistake had been made, and it cannot be undone. Well, Esau, of course, begs in verse 31. It says, when he hears this from his father, he cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry. You ever cried that badly? Oh man, this shook Esau to the core. And he said, "Bless me also, O my father." And there's got to be some way to revoke this, some way to undo this. And Isaac basically says there is not. And so he's like, "Well, don't you have any blessing for me?" And so the father does give him a prophetic pronouncement for him, but it would not have been as great as what could have been given to the first. Verse 39, "And Isaac his father answered and said to him, 'Behold, your dwelling shall be with the fatness of the earth and of the dew of the heaven from above. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. And it shall come to pass, when you become restless, that you shall break his yoke from your neck.'" And so it's clearly not as good as the other blessing and the idea that he would serve his brother. So Esau is hot, right? Not only has he lost the legal rights, right, to the firstborn's inheritance, but he's also lost the prophetic rights to the best blessing as well. And so what does he want to do to Jacob?
Kill him.
That's right. You might, and brothers have done that before, right? Remember Cain and Abel. This is serious. It's really serious. So word of that gets to Rebecca. That's right. And so what do they do next?
He lies again.
Yeah. What does she say? That's right. That's right.
That's probably true.
Yeah, where was the lie? I'm trying to figure where's the lie. Okay.
Verse
44.
44.
Okay, okay. Well, there she might have thought it might have been a few days. I don't know. But yes, so she definitely wants to send Jacob out of the house for his life's sake, right? Flee to my brother Laban in Haran. So there's Haran again, right? Or Haran. And there, hopefully things can get better, right? So that's the plan. That's the plan. And he takes off, heads for the hills, and gets out of there. So on his journey, he runs, and in chapter 28, he stops at Bethel, makes a pit stop there, and he dreams a dream. And it's an important dream, and the Bible makes sure that we understand it, or that we discuss it and read it and think about it. So let's turn to chapter 28. And if I can have a reader to read verses 10 through 22. Stephanie.
And Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran, and he lighted up upon a certain place and tarried there all night, because the sun was set, and he took of the stones of that place and put them for his pillows and lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set upon the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it, and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac, the land whereon thou didst lie. To thee will I give it into thy seed, and thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again unto this land. For I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee. And Jacob awoke out of his sleep, and he said, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I know it not. And he was afraid, and he said, How dreadful is this place! This is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. And Jacob arose up early in the morning, and took the stone that he had put for his pillows, and set it up for a pillar, and poured oil upon the top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel, and the name of that city was called Luz at the first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, If God will be with me, and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat, and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee.
All right. Thank you, Stephanie. Okay, so Jacob is on the run. Last we saw with Isaac and Rachel, Rebecca, they're kind of in the Philistine territory here. This is where Abraham and Sarah had also been as well. And he runs for Haran, and there is Bethel, where the ladder reaching up to heaven appears to him in a dream. But he's heading up this way, just as previously before. Heading to family, see if he can find refuge there. So tell me about this. First off, what does Bethel mean? Does anyone know? He names it Bethel. It was formerly Luz. It means house. Oh, sorry, go ahead. There you go. You got it. That's right. House of God. So, Bet is the Hebrew word for house. El was the name for God. A house of God. And this dream that he sees, what is so striking about it? Yeah, that's right, yeah. I mean, yes, and so what might that signify? Okay.
God ministering to him.
Okay, blessing him for sure. And so he talks about how God had saw to his needs and cared for him. What do you do with a ladder?
Climbing.
You climb and
descend.
That's right. And so there's these clues that are given of God coming down to earth. Right? And then returning back to heaven. And so there's these small little clues. Remember we talked about how Jesus said, you know, Moses wrote about me? These small little clues of God, piece, little piece here, little piece there, revealing some of his plans in the future, right? That his son would indeed one day be sent. He would establish his house, right? And he would ascend back into heaven. But Jacob is so impressed by this, you know, he sets up this rock, this place, it's going to be a special place, and he knows that when he comes back, he will also offer a sacrifice to God. And so it was also a reiteration of the promise, right? In Isaac, in Jacob, your name is also now going to be called, right? He gives him, in essence, the same words, the same blessings that he'd given to Abraham, right? I am the Lord of the God, God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land which you lie, I will give to you and your descendants. And of your descendants, they shall be as the dust of the earth. Right? So now, there's that one part of that threefold promise right now is being attached here to Jacob. And he knows it. He knows it. It's fulfilling God's word, right? The older shall serve the younger. Two nations are in your womb. So it's going to be through Jacob, this unfolds. I don't know why I didn't. I had the map zoomed in so now I could see it a little better. There's Bethel. And there's the well that he's running to, where he'll meet Rachel at the well. Any other comments, questions, thoughts? All right. Again, I'm spending more time on these patriarchs because it's kind of foundational. A lot of times later on in the New Testament, some of these stories are referenced, right? You know, even Jesus talked about this one, right? To Philip, who was under the tree, remember? And he says, oh, you're going to see greater things than that, right? Such as the angels ascending and descending upon the Son of Man, right? So Jesus was connecting himself to this. A lot of these stories have significance later on. Okay, Charlotte, and then Liz.
One thing I noticed when I was studying was that when Jacob went or Eliezer went to get a wife for Isaac, mm-hmm. that he took all these gifts and jewels for her. But when Jacob left, he only had the staff in his hand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Just taking what he could and running, you know. But yeah, that's an interesting contrast. Good point. And it may be also part of the reason why he has to work 7 years. I don't know.
You didn't bring it down.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Well, I know with Jacob and Esau, it's like a lesson, one lesson we should learn is that some of our actions have severe consequences that can't be undone.
Mm-hmm.
And then one thing, too, with Jacob is we don't have any record that he ever saw his mother again.
Hmm.
And I just
might have said that. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yep. Judy?
I was going to say, if we go back up where it said Esau hated Jacob,
mm-hmm.
I think the reference Jesus always said, it starts from your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And look what the hate led to, and it says more and more.
Yeah.
But even though they seem to be doing all this craziness, God had a plan, and even if they had done another way, God would have found another way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he had a plan. It seems to be disobeying a lot.
Yeah. You know, God can use even the disobedience of individuals to fulfill his way, even if they try to fight against it, right? Yes, yes. And interesting thought, too, when you talk about the hatred. So Jacob's mother was right. In time, the fury does subside, right? We're not actually going to read that in the journey, but in time, Esau does reflect and recognize God's will in all this and is happy to see. That's right. That's right. Sometimes, you know, you got to give someone some time and space, right?
I think he was gone 20 years.
Yeah.
And that, mm-hmm. when they reunite, sometimes when I read it, I still shed tears.
I know. And it gives you hope. It gives people hope in life too, because sometimes there are fractures that happen between siblings, a family, or even brethren sometimes, right? And it becomes so sharp that it really just takes time to heal. And it can happen to the best of us. It happened to the Apostle Paul and Barnabas, right? When the contention became so sharp between them, they had to go separate ways, but then they came back together again and had love and mutual appreciation for each other. And so we see that even in the story of Jacob and Esau. Good. Brandy?
In that reunion, I think it's important to notice that Jacob was humble. He was
absolutely.
He wanted to give gifts. He wanted to make things better between them. But Esau had already forgiven him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it takes both people to make that work.
That's right. That's right.
Both of them to make the problem.
That's
both
true.
Both of them to fix the problem.
True. Good point. Anybody else? Nancy?
For me, when I first started digging into this, I think we get the idea that all this genealogy and all of this in this book is so different. You have to remember that's all of that. But really, it just goes down to Abraham, Isaac,
yeah.
Jacob, the 12 sons.
Yes.
And they're the ones that go with the land, and they're the nation. And if we look at it that way, I think it makes it much easier.
Yes.
If Jesus comes from one of the sons.
Yes.
But I think if this picture is so much,
And there is a lot of detail, you know, but in trying to get the big picture, right, you're hitting those main individuals like we're doing here, and you mentioned the 12 tribes. That's what comes next, right? Because Jacob in chapter 29 meets Rachel and Leah and Haran, right? And Haran and marries and has the children. So without reading the entire thing, does anyone remember some of the details of Jacob and Rachel and Leah?
He was supposed to work 7 years.
Okay. So he sees Rachel, right? And it's the old phrase that we like to use. It was love at the first sight. That's right. And he wants to, right? He didn't bring, like Charlotte said, a bunch of gifts. And so he says, I'll commit to working for 7 years. And what those 7 years seem like to him? The Bible actually tells us that it seemed like an eternity.
Only a few days.
Only a few days. So, I mean, he really, really loved her and wanted to be with her. And so he commits 7 years of his life to pay this dowry, right, to earn her. But what happens?
The father gives Leah to him instead because it's tradition that eldest is married first, not the youngest, before. So he made another.
That's right. So it's obviously dark, it's at night, and he doesn't recognize, oh no, he's been with the wrong girl. But the father can't revoke it, right? It's a tradition, like she said, it, we give the firstborn first. So commit to me another 7 years, and I'll give you Rachel. And so he does do that, and Rachel's given him his wife as well. And so we're seeing sometimes this happen, right? It's polygamous marriages. Like Judy had said, it's not necessarily part of God's will, but he's going to use these decisions and impacts of individuals to still bring about his will for mankind. And so they begin to have children. So look here in chapter 29. You see there verse 31. It says, when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved. Why does he unlove her? Because he didn't really want to marry her in the first place, right? But the Lord has this compassion for her, opened the womb, but Rachel was barren. Because, you know, no one will love you like a child will love you, right? And so he gives Leah some children first. Verse 32, so Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben, right? Verse 33, then she conceived again and bore a son, and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. Look at verse 34. Another son is given. Therefore, his name was called Levi. And then verse 35, therefore, she called his name Judah, and then she stopped bearing. And so some very significant names are born through Leah, the one that wasn't his first choice. But then we see God have now compassion on Rachel, chapter 30. Now, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." And so he said in verse 2, "Am I in the place of God?" This is God who opens the wound, but God does in time. Verse 6, we see God judged my case, Rachel said, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son. Therefore, she called his name Dan. Then the end of verse 8, another son. So she called his name Naphtali. Verse 11, then Leah, now she has another child. A troop comes and she calls his name Gad. Verse 13, Leah again, "I'm happy for the daughters will call me blessed." So she called his name Asher. And all the way down, we see verse 18, verse 20, verse 21, verse 24 is finally when Joseph is born. So we see Jacob has these children. There's a lot of them. And now God's going to bless the entire nation. This is where the nation's going to come. These are the roots of the nation. And notice, look, in time later on. So you got Moses writing Genesis, and Moses now explaining, you know, hey, here's all your family history. Here's all the roots of where you guys came from. And in the time to come, in the days of Joshua, the land will be divided. And look, there's all the names of all those children to Rachel and Leah. And so God's unfolding his plan to fulfill his promises. Okay, I got all that in before the end of our time. So what we'll look at next is, let's see, we're going to actually stay with Jacob because he's going to have to come back and wrestle with God. And then we'll get eventually to Joseph. The record's going to now turn to Joseph, okay? Any final thoughts? Thank you all for your comments today. We'll dismiss our class now.